raider and his doings, if I had a mind. This of the empty villages, that's his work. You would have found this hall abandoned as well, if I were a man to scrape to such. He sends a rider, tells me I must leave my own keep to come grovel at his feet. I sent the man back, but kept his tongue. It's nailed to that wall there, he pointed. Might be I could tell you where to seek Mansreader, if I had a mind. The brown smile again. But we'll have time enough for that. You'll be wanting to sleep beneath my roof, belike, and eat me out of pigs.
A roof would be most welcome, my lord, Mormont said. We've had hard riding and too much wit.
Then you'll be guest here for a night. No longer. I'm not that fond of crows. The loft's for me and mine, but you'll have all the floor you like. I've meat and beer for 20, no more. The rest of your black crows can peck after their own corn.
We've pecked in our own supplies, my lord, said the old bear. We should be pleased to share our food and wine.
Craster wiped his drooping mouth with the back of a hairy hand.
I'll taste your wine, Lord Crow, that I will. One more thing. Any man lays a hand on my wives, he loses the hand.
Your rule, said Thorin Smallwood, and Lord Mormont nodded stiffly, though he looked none too pleased.
That's settled, then.
Craster grudged them a grunt.
Do you have a man can draw a map?
Sam Tarly can, John pushed forward. Sam loves maps. Mormont beckoned him closer.
Send him here after he's eaten. Have him bring quill and parchment. And find Tollet as well. Tell him to bring an axe. A guest gift for our host. Who's this one now?
Craster said before John could go.
He has the look of a Stark. My steward and squire, John Snow. A bastard, is it?
Craster looked John up and down.
Man wants to bed a woman. Seems like he ought to take her to wife. That's what I do.
He shooed John off with a wave.
Well, run and do your service, bastard, and see that axe is good and sharp now. I've no use for dull steel.
John Snow bowed stiffly and took his leave. Sir Otin Withers was coming in as he was leaving, and they almost collided at the deerhide door. Outside, the rain seemed to have slackened. Tents had gone up all over the compound. John could see the tops of others under the trees. Dolorous Ed was feeding the horses.
Call give the wilding an axe, why not, eh?
He pointed out Mormont's weapon, a short-hafted battle axe with gold scroll work inlaid on the black steel blade.
He'll give it back, I vow. Buried in the old bear skull, eh? Like as not. Why not give him all our axes and our swords as well, eh? I mislike the way they clank and rattle as we ride. We'll travel faster, eh, without them. Straight to Hell's door. Does it rain in Hell, I wonder? Eh? Perhaps Craster would like a nice hat instead, eh?
John smiled. He wants an axe and wine as well.
See, the old bear's clever, eh? If we get the wildling well and truly drunk, eh? Perhaps he'll only cut off an ear when he tries to slay us with that axe. I have 2 ears, but only 1 ear, eh?
Smallwood said Craster is a friend to the Watch.
Do you know the difference between a wildling who's a friend to the Watch and one who's not, eh?
Asked the Dour Squire.
Our enemies leave our bodies for the crows, eh? And the wolves. Our friends bury us in secret graves. I wonder how long that bear's been nailed up on that gate and what Craster had there before we came hallooing, eh?
Ed looked at the axe doubtfully, the rain running down his long face.
Is it dry in there, eh?
Drier than out here.
If I look about, eh, not too close to the fire, belike they'll take no note of me till morning, eh? The ones under his roof will be the first he murders, but at least we'll die dry, eh?
John had to laugh. Craster's one man.
We're 200. I doubt he'll murder anyone.
You cheer me, said Ed, sounding utterly morose. And besides, there's much to be said for a good sharp axe. I'd hate to be murdered with a maul. I saw a man hit in the brow with a maul once, eh? Cool, scarce fit of skin at all. But his head turned mushy and swelled up big as a gourd, only purply red, eh? A comely man, but he died ugly, eh? It's good that we're not giving them mauls.
Ed walked away, shaking his head, his sudden black cloak shedding rain behind him. John got the horses fed before he stopped to think of his own supper. He was wondering where to find Sam when he heard a shout of fear. Wolf! He sprinted around the hall towards the cry, the earth sucking at his boots. One of Craster's women was backed up against the mud-spattered wall of the keep.
Keep away! She was shouting at Ghost. You keep away!
The direwolf had a rabbit in his mouth and another dead and bloody on the ground before him.
Get it away, my lord,
she pleaded when she saw him. He won't hurt you. He knew at once what had happened. A wooden hutch, its slats shattered, lay on its side in the wet grass. He must have been hungry. We haven't seen much game. John whistled. The direwolf bolted down the rabbit, crunching the small bones between his teeth, and padded over to him. The woman regarded them with nervous eyes. She was younger than he'd thought at first. A girl of 15 or 16 years, he judged. Dark hair, plastered across a gaunt face by the falling rain. Her bare feet muddy to the ankles. The body under the sewn skins was showing in the early turns of pregnancy. Are you one of Craster's daughters? He asked. She put a hand over her belly. Wife now. Edging away from the wolf, she knelt mournfully beside the broken hutch.
I was going to breed them rabbits. There's no sheep left.
The watch will make good for them. John had no coin of his own, or he would have offered it to her, though he was not sure what good a few coppers or even a silver piece would do her beyond the wall. I'll speak to Lord Mormont on the morrow. She wiped her hands on her skirt.
My lord?
I'm no lord. But others had come crowding round, drawn by the woman's scream and the crash of the rabbit hutch.
Don't you believe him, girl?
Called out Lark, the sister man, a ranger mean as a cur.
That's Lord Snow himself.
Bastard of Winterfell and brother to kings, mocked Chet, who left his hounds to see what the commotion was about.
That wolf's looking at you hungry, girl, Lark said. Might be it fancies that tender bit in your belly.
John was not amused. You're scaring her. Warning her, more like. Chet's grin was as ugly as the boils that covered most of his face. We're not to talk to you, the girl remembered suddenly.
Wait,
John said, too late. She bolted, ran. Lark made a grab for the second rabbit, but Ghost was quicker. When he bared his teeth, the sister man slipped in the mud and went down on his bony butt. The others laughed. The direwolf took the rabbit in his mouth and brought it to John. There was no call to scare the girl, he told them.
We'll hear no skulls from you, bastard.
Chet blamed John for the loss of his comfortable position with Maester Aemon, and not without justice. If he had not gone to Aemon about Sam Tarly, Chet would still be tending an old blind man instead of a pack of ill-tempered hunting hounds.
You may be the Lord Commander's pet, but you're not the Lord Commander, and you wouldn't talk so bloody bold without that monster of yours always about.
I'll not fight a brother while we're beyond the wall, John answered, his voice cooler than he felt. Lark got to one knee.
He's afraid of you, Chet. On the sisters, we have a name for them like him.
I know all the names, save your breath. He walked away, Ghost at his side. The rain had dwindled to a thin drizzle by the time he reached the gate. Dusk would be on them soon, followed by another wet, dark, dismal night. The clouds would hide moon and stars and Mormont's torch, turning the woods black as pitch. Every piss would be an adventure, if not quite of the sort Jon Snow had once envisioned. Out under the trees, some rangers had found enough duff and dry wood to start a fire beneath a slanting ridge of slate. Others had raised tents or made crude shelters by stretching their cloaks over low branches. Giant had crammed himself inside the hollow of a dead oak.
"How do you like my castle, Lord Snow?"
"It looks snug. Do you know where Sam is?"
"Keep on the way you were. If you come to Sir Otten's pavilion, you've gone too far."
Giant smiled.
"Unless Sam's found him a tree too, what a tree that would be."
It was Ghost who found Sam in the end. The dire wolf shot ahead like a quarrel from a crossbow. Under an outcrop of rock that gave some small degree of shelter from the rain, Sam was feeding the ravens. His boots squished as he moved.
"My feet are soaked through," he admitted miserably. "When I climbed off my horse, I stepped in a hole and went in up to my knees."
"Take off your boots and dry your stockings. I'll find some dry wood. If the ground's not wet under the rock, we might be able to get a fire burning." John showed Sam the rabbit, "and we'll feast."
"Won't you be attending Lord Mormont in the hall?"
"No, but you will. The old bear wants you to map for him. Craster says he'll find Mance Raider for us."
"Oh."
Sam did not look anxious to meet Craster, even if it meant a warm fire. "He said eat first, though. Dry your feet." John went to gather fuel, digging down under deadfalls from the drier wood beneath, and peeling back layers of sodden pine needles until he found likely kindling. Even then, it seemed to take forever for a spark to catch. He hung his cloak from the rock to keep the rain off his smoky little fire, making them a small, snug alcove. As he knelt to skin the rabbit, Sam pulled off his boots.
"I think there's musk growing between my toes," he declared mournfully,
wriggling the toes in question.
"The rabbit will taste good. I don't even mind about the blood and all."
He looked away.
"Well, only a little."
John spit at the carcass, banked the fire with a pair of rocks, and balanced their meal atop them. The rabbit had been a scrawny thing, but as it cooked, it smelt like a king's feast. Other rangers gave them envious looks. Even Ghost looked up hungrily, flames shining in his red eyes as he sniffed.
"You had yours before,"
John reminded him.
"Is Craster as savage as the rangers say?"
Sam asked. The rabbit was a shade underdone, but tasted wonderful.
"What's his castle like?"
"A midden heap with a roof and a fire pit," John told Sam what he had seen and heard in Craster's keep. By the time the telling was done, it was dark outside, and Sam was licking his fingers.
"That was good, and now I'd like a leg of lamb. A whole leg just for me, sauce with mint and honey and cloves. Did you see any lambs?"
"There was a sheepfold, but no sheep."
"How does he feed all his men?"
"I didn't see any men, just Craster and his women, and a few small girls. I wonder he's able to hold the place. His defences were nothing to speak about, only a muddy dike. You'd better go up to the hall and draw that map. Can you find the way?"
"If I don't fall in the mud."
Sam struggled back into his boots, collected quill and parchment, and shouldered out into the night, the rain pattering down on his cloak and floppy hat. Ghost laid his head on his paws and went to sleep by the fire. John stretched out beside him, grateful for the warmth. He was cold and wet, but not so cold and wet as he had been a short time before.
"Perhaps tonight the old bear will learn something that will lead us to Uncle Benjamin."
He woke to the sight of his own breath misting in the cold morning air. When he moved, his bones ached. Ghost was gone. The fire burnt out. John reached to pull aside the cloak he'd hung over the rock and found it stiff and frozen. He crept beneath it and stood up in a forest turned to crystal. The pale pink light of dawn sparkled on branch and leaf and stone.
Every blade of grass was carved from emerald. Every drip of water turned to diamond. Flowers and mushrooms alike wore coats of glass. Even the mud puddles had a bright brown sheen. Through the shimmering greenery, the black tents of his brothers were encased in a fine glaze of ice. So there is magic beyond the wall after all. He found himself thinking of his sisters, perhaps because he'd dreamed of them last night. Sansa would call this an enchantment, and tears would fill her eyes at the wonder of it all. But Arya would run out laughing and shouting, wanting to touch it all.
"Lord Snow," he heard,
soft and meek. He turned. Crouched atop the rock that had sheltered him during the night was the rabbit keeper, wrapped in a black cloak so large it drowned her. Sam's cloak, John realized at once. Why is she wearing Sam's cloak?
"The fat one told me I'd find you here, my lord," she said.
"We ate the rabbit, if that's what you came for." The admission made him feel absurdly guilty.
"Old Lord Crow, in with the talking bird, he gave Craster a crossbow worth 100 rabbits."
Her arms crossed over the swell of her belly.
"Is it true, my lord? Are you brother to a king?"
"A half-brother," he admitted. "I'm Ned Stark's bastard. My brother Rob is the king in the north.
Why are you here?" "The fat one, that, Sam, he said to see you. He gave me his cloak so no one would say I didn't belong."
"Won't Craster be angry with you?"
"My father drank overmuch of the Lord Crow's wine last night. He'll sleep most of the day."
Her breath frosted the air in small, nervous puffs.
"They say the king gives justice and protects the weak."
She started to climb off the rock awkwardly, but the ice had made it slippery and her foot went out from under her. John caught her before she could fall and helped her safely down. The woman knelt on the icy ground.
"My lord, I beg you..."
"Don't beg me anything. Go back to your hall. You shouldn't be here. We were commanded not to speak to Craster's women."
"You don't have to speak with me, my lord. Just take me with you. When you go, that's all I ask." All she asks, he thought, as if that were nothing. I'll be your wife, if you like. My father, he's got 19 now. One less won't hurt him none."
"Black brothers are sworn never to take wives. Don't you know that? And we're guests in your father's hall, besides."
"Not you," she said. "I watched. You never ate at his board, nor slept by his fire. He never gave you guest right, so you're not bound to him. It's for the baby I have to go."
"I don't even know your name."
"Gilly," he called me, "for the gilly flower."
"That's pretty." He remembered Sansa telling him once that he should say that whenever a lady told him her name. He could not help the girl, but perhaps the courtesy would please her. "Is it Craster who frightens you, Gilly?"
"For the baby, not for me. If it's a girl, that's not so bad. She'll grow a few years and he'll marry her. But Nella says if it's to be a boy, and she's had 6 and knows these things, he gives the boys to the gods. Come the white cold, he does. And of late, it comes more often. That's why he started giving them sheep, even though he has a taste for mutton. Only now the sheep's gone, too. Next, it will be dogs till..."
She lowered her eyes and stroked her belly. "What gods?" John was remembering that they'd seen no boys in Craster's keep, nor men either, save Craster himself.
"The cold gods," she said, "the ones in the night, the white shadows."
And suddenly, John was back in the Lord Commander's tower again. A severed hand was climbing his calf, and when he pried it off with the point of his longsword, it lay writhing, fingers opening and closing. The dead man rose to his feet, blue eyes shining in that gashed and swollen face. Ropes of torn flesh hung from the great wound in his belly, yet there was no blood. "What color are their eyes?" he asked her.
"Blue, as bright as blue stars, and as cold."
"She has seen them," he thought. "Craster lied.
Will you take me just so far as the wall?
We do not ride for the wall. We ride north, after Mansraider and these others. These white shadows and their whites. We seek them, Gilly. Your babe would not be safe with us. Her fear was plain on her face.
You will come back, though, when your warring's done. You'll pass this way again.
We may, if any of us still live. That's for the old bear to say, the one you call the Lord Crow. I'm only his squire. I do not choose the road I ride.
No, he could hear the defeat in her voice. Sorry to be of trouble, my lord. I only... They said the king keeps people safe, and I thought...
Despairing, she ran, Sam's cloak flapping behind her like great black wings. John watched her go, his joy in the morning's brittle beauty gone.
Damn her, he thought resentfully, and damn Sam twice for sending her to me. What did he think I could do for her? We're here to fight wildlings, not save them.
Other men were crawling from their shelters, yawning and stretching. The magic was already faded. Icy brightness turning back to common dew in the light of the rising sun. Someone had gotten a fire started. He could smell wood smoke drifting through the trees and the smoky scent of bacon. John took down his cloak and snapped it against the rock, shattering the thin crust of ice that formed in the night, then gathered up Longclaw and shrugged his arm through a shoulder strap. A few yards away, he made water into a frozen bush, his piss steaming in the cold air and melting the ice wherever it fell. Afterwards, he laced up his black wool breeches and followed the smells. Gren and Dywin were among the brothers who had gathered round the fire. Hake handed John a hollow heel of bread filled with burnt bacon and chunks of saltfish warmed in bacon grease. He woofed it down while listening to Dywin's boast of having three of Craster's women during the night.
You did not, Gren said, scowling. I would have seen.
Dywin whapped him alongside his ear with the back of his hand.
You see, you're blind as Maester Aemon. You never even saw that bear.
What bear?
Was there a bear? Called it, there's always a bear, eh?
Declared Dolorous Ed in his usual tone of gloomy resignation.
One killed my brother, eh, when I was young. Afterwards, it wore his teeth round its neck on a leather thong. And they were good teeth, too. Better than mine, eh? I've had nothing but trouble with my teeth, eh?
Did Sam sleep in the hall last night? John asked.
I'd not call it sleeping, eh? The ground was hard, the rushes ill-smelling, eh? And my brother snore frightfully. Speak of bears, if you will. None ever growl so fierce as Brown Bernard. I was warm, though, eh? Some dogs crawled atop of me during the night. My cloak was almost dry, eh? When one of them pissed in it. Or perhaps it was Brown Bernard. Have you noticed the rain stopped the instant I had a roof over me, eh? It will start again now that I'm back out. Gods and dogs alike delight to piss on me, eh?
I'd best go see to Lord Mormont, John said. The rain might have stopped, but the compound was still a morass of shallow lakes and slippery mud. Black brothers were folding their tents, feeding their horses, and chewing on strips of salt beef. John and Buckwell scouts were tightening the girths on their saddles before setting out.
John? Buckwell greeted him from horseback. Keep a good edge on that bastard sword of yours. We'll be needing it soon enough.
Craster's hall was dim after daylight. Inside, the night torches had burned low, and it was hard to know that the sun had risen. Lord Mormont's raven was the first to spy him enter. Three lazy flaps of his great black wings, and it perched atop Longclaw's hilt.
Corn!
It nipped a strand of John's hair.
Ignore that wretched beggar bird, John. It's just had half my bacon.
The old bear sat at Craster's board,
breaking his fast with the other officers on fried bread, bacon, and sheep gut sausage. Craster's new axe was on the table, its gold inlay gleaming faintly in the torchlight. Its owner was sprawled unconscious in the sleeping loft above, but the women were all up, moving about and serving. What sort of day do we have? Cold, but the rain has stopped. Very good. See that my horse is saddled and ready. I mean for us to ride within the hour. Have you eaten? Craster serves plain fare, but filling.
I will not eat Craster's food, he decided suddenly.
I broke my fast with the men, my lord. John shooed the raven off Longclaw. The bird hopped back to Mormont's shoulder, where it promptly shat.
You might have done that on snow instead of saving it for me, the old bear grumbled. The raven quacked.
He found Sam behind the hall, standing with Gilly at the broken rabbit hutch. She was helping him back into his cloak. But when she saw John, she stole away. Sam gave him a look of wounded reproach.
I thought you would help her.
And how was I to do that? John said sharply. Take her with us, wrapped up in your cloak?
We were commanded not to.
I know, said Sam guiltily. But she was afraid. I know what it is to be afraid. I told her... He swallowed.
What? That we take her with us?
Sam's fat face blushed a deep red.
On the way home...
He could not meet John's eyes.
She's going to have a baby. Sam, have you taken leave of all your senses? We may not even return this way. And if we do, do you think the old bear is going to let you pack off one of Craster's wives? Well, I thought maybe by then I could think of a way.
I have no time for this. I have horses to groom and saddle. John walked away as confused as he was angry. Sam's heart was as big as the rest of him, but for all his reading, he could be as thick as Gren at times. It was impossible. And dishonorable, besides.
So why do I feel so ashamed?
John took his accustomed position at Mormont's side as the night's watch streamed out past the skulls on Craster's Gate. They struck off north and west along a crooked game trail. Melting ice dripped down all about them, a slower sort of rain with its own soft music. North of the compound, the brook was in full spate, choked with leaves and bits of wood. But the scouts had found where the ford lay, and the column was able to splash across. The water ran as high as a horse's belly. Ghost swam, emerging on the bank with his white fur dripping brown. When he shook, spraying mud and water in all directions, Mormont said nothing, but on his shoulder the raven screeched. "My lord," John said quietly, as the wood closed in around them once more. "Craster has no sheep, nor any sons." Mormont made no answer. At Winterfell, one of the serving women told us stories, John went on. She used to say that there were wildlings who would lay with the others to birth half-human children.
Hearth tales. Does Craster seem less than human to you?
In 50 ways. He gives his sons to the wood. A long silence. Then, yes. And,
yes,
the raven muttered, strutting.
Yes, yes, yes.
You knew.
Smallwood told me, long ago. All the rangers know, though few will talk of it.
Did my uncle know?
All the rangers, Mormont repeated. Do you think I ought to stop him? Kill him, if need be.
The old bear sighed.
Were it only that he wished to rid himself of some mouths, I'd gladly send Yorin or Conwys to collect the boys. We could raise them to the black, and the watch would be that much the stronger. But the wildlings serve crueler gods than you or I. These boys are Craster's offerings, his prayers, if you will.
His wives must offer different prayers, John thought.
How is it you came to know this?
The old bear asked him.
From one of Craster's wives?
Yes, my lord, John confessed. I would sooner not tell you which. She was frightened and wanted help. The wide world is full of people wanting help, John. Would that some could find the courage to help themselves. Craster sprawls in his loft even now, stinking of wine and lost to sense. On his board below lies a sharp new axe. Were it me, I'd name it Answered Prayer and make an end.
Yes. John thought of Gilly. She and her sisters. They were 19, and Craster was one, but...
Yet it would be an ill day for us if Craster died. Your uncle could tell you of the times Craster's keep made the difference between life and death for our rangers.
My father... He hesitated.
Go on, John. Say what you would say.
My father once told me that some men are not worth having. John finished. A banner man who is brutal or unjust dishonors his liege lord as well as himself.
Craster's his own man. He has sworn us no vows, nor is he subject to our laws. Your heart is noble, John, but learn a lesson here. We cannot set the world to rights. That is not our purpose. The Night's Watch has other wars to fight.
Other wars? Yes, I must remember. Jarman Buckwell said I might have need of my sword soon.
Did he?
Mormont did not seem pleased.
Craster said much and more last night, and confirmed enough of my fears to condemn me to a sleepless night on his floor. Mance Raider is gathering his people together in the Frostfangs. That's why the villages are empty. It is the same tale that Sir Dennis Mallister had from the wildling his men captured in the gorge. But Craster has added the where, and that makes all the difference.
Is he making a city or an army?
Now that is the question. How many wildlings are there? How many men of fighting age? No one knows with certainty. The Frostfangs are cruel, inhospitable, a wilderness of stone and ice. They will not long sustain any great number of people. I can see only one purpose in this gathering. Mance Raider means to strike south into the Seven Kingdoms.
Wildlings have invaded the realm before. John had heard the tales from Old Nan and Maester Lewin both, back at Winterfell. Raymond Redbeard led them south in the time of my grandfather's grandfather, and before him there was a king named Bale the Bard.
Aye, and long before them came the Horned Lord and his brother kings, Gendel and Gorn, and in ancient days, Joramun, who blew the horn of winter and woke giants from the earth. Each man of them broke his strength on the wall, or was broken by the power of Winterfell on the far side. But the Night's Watch is only a shadow of what we were. And who remains to oppose the wildlings besides us? The Lord of Winterfell is dead, and his heir has marched his strength south to fight the Lannisters. The wildlings may never again have such a chance as this. I knew Mance Raider, John. He is an oath-breaker, yes, but he has eyes to see, and no man has ever dared to name him faint-heart.
What will we do? Asked John.
Find him, said Mormont. Fight him. Stop him.
300, thought John, against the fury of the wild. His fingers opened and closed. Theon. She was undeniably a beauty. But your first is always beautiful, Theon Greyjoy thought.
Now there's a pretty grin,
a woman's voice said behind him.
The lordling likes the look of her, does he?
Theon turned to give her an appraising glance. He liked what he saw. Ironborn, he knew at a glance. Lean and long-legged, with black hair cut short, wind-chafed skin, strong, sure hands, a dirk at her belt. Her nose was too big and too sharp for her thin face, but her smile made up for it. He judged her a few years older than he was,
but no more than 25. She moved as if she were used to a deck beneath her feet. "Yes, she's a sweet sight," he told her, "though not half as sweet as you."
"Oh," she grinned, "I'd best be careful. This lordling has a honeyed tongue.
Taste it and see."
"Is it that way, then?" she said,
eyeing him boldly. There were women on the Iron Islands, not many, but a few, who crewed the longships along with their men, and it was said that salt and sea changed them, gave them a man's appetites.
"Have you been that long at sea, lordling? Or were there no women where you came from?"
"Women enough, but none like you."
"And how would you know what I'm like?"
"My eyes can see your face. My ears can hear your laughter. And my cock's gone hard as a mast for you." The woman stepped close and pressed a hand to the front of his breeches.
"Well, you're no liar,"
she said, giving him a squeeze through the cloth.
"How bad does it hurt?"
"Fiercely."
"Poor lordling."
She released him and stepped back.
"As it happens, I'm a woman wed and new with child."
"The gods are good," Theon said. "No chance I'd give you a bastard that way."
"Even so, my man wouldn't thank you."
"No, but you might."
"And why would that be? I've had lords before. They're made the same as other men."
"Have you ever had a prince?" he asked her. "When you're wrinkled and grey, and your tits hang past your belly, you can tell your children's children that once you loved a king."
"Oh, is it love we're talking now? And here I thought it was just cocks and cunts."
"Is it love you fancy?" He decided that he liked this wench, whoever she was. Her sharp wit was a welcome respite from the damp gloom of Pike. "Shall I name my longship after you, and play you the high harp, and keep you in a tower room in my castle with only jewels to wear, like a princess in a song?"
"You ought to name your ship after me," she said, ignoring all the rest. "It was me who built her."
"Sigrin built her, my lord father's shipwright."
"I am Eskred, Ambrode's daughter and wife to Sigrin."
He had not known that Ambrode had a daughter, or Sigrin a wife. But he'd met the younger shipwright only once, and the older one he scarce remembered. "You're wasted on Sigrin."
"Oh-ho! Sigrin told me this sweet ship is wasted on you."
Theon bristled.
"Do you know who I am? Prince Theon of House Greyjoy. Who else? Tell me true, my lord. How well do you love her, this new maid of yours? Sigrin will want to know."
The longship was so new that she still smelled of pitch and resin. His uncle Aaron would bless her on the morrow, but Theon had ridden over from Pike to get a look at her before she was launched. She was not so large as Lord Balin's own Great Kraken or his uncle Victarion's Iron Victory, but she looked swift and sweet, even sitting in her wooden cradle on the strand. Lean black hull, 100 feet long, a single tall mast, 50 long oars, deck enough for 100 men. And at the prow, the great iron ram in the shape of an arrowhead. "Sigrin did me good service," he admitted. "Is she as fast as she looks?"
"Faster, for a master who knows how to handle her.
It has been a few years since I sailed a ship,
and I've never captained one, if truth be told.
Still, I'm a Greyjoy and an Iron Man. The sea is in my blood."
"And your blood will be in the sea if you sail the way you talk," she told him.
"I would never mistreat such a fair maiden."
"Fair maiden," she laughed. "She's a sea bitch, this one."
"There, and now you've named her, sea bitch." That amused her. He could see the sparkle in her dark eyes.
"And you said you'd name her after me?"
she said in a voice of wounded reproach. "I did." He caught her hand. "Help me, my lady. In the Greenlands, they believe a woman with child means good fortune for any man who beds her."
And what do they know about ships in the Greenlands? Or women, for that matter? Besides, I think you've made that up.
"If I confess, will you still love me?"
"Still? When have I ever loved you?"
"Never," he admitted. "But I am trying to repair that lack, my sweet Eskred. The wind is cold. Come aboard my ship and let me warm you. On the morrow, my uncle Aaron will pour seawater over a prow and mumble a prayer to the drowned god,
but I'd sooner bless her with the milk of my loins and yours. The drowned guard might not take that kindly. Bugger the drowned guard. If he troubles us, I'll drown him again. We're off to war within a fortnight. Would you send me into battle, all sleepless with longing? Gladly. A cruel mate. My ship is well named. If I steer her onto the rocks in my distraction, you'll have yourself to blame. Do you plan to steer with this?
Eskred brushed the front of his breeches once more and smiled as a finger traced the iron outline of his manhood.
Come back to Pike with me, he said suddenly, thinking, what will Lord Balin say? And why should I care? I'm a man grown. If I want to bring a wench to bed, it is no one's business but my own. And what would I do in Pike?
Her hand stayed where it was.
My father will feast his captains tonight.
He had them to feast every night while he waited for the last stragglers to arrive, but Theon saw no need to tell all that.
Would you make me your captain for the night, my lord prince?
She had the wickedest smile he'd ever seen on a woman.
I might, if I knew you'd steer me safe into port. Well, I know which end of the oar goes in the sea, and there's no one better with ropes and knots.
One-handed, she undid the lacings of his breeches, then grinned and stepped lightly away from him.
A pity I'm a woman wed, and you with child.
Flustered, Theon laced himself back up. I need to start back to the castle. If you do not come with me, I may lose my way for grief, and all the islands would be poorer.
Oh, we couldn't have that. But I have no horse, my lord.
You could take my squire's mount.
And leave your poor squire to walk all the way to Pike.
Share mine, then.
You'd like that well enough. The smile again. Now, would I be behind you or in front?
You'd be wherever you like.
I like to be on top. Where has this wench been all my life?
My father's hall is dim and dank. It needs Eskred to make the fires blaze.
The lordling has a honeyed tongue. Isn't that where we began?
She threw up her hands.
And where we end. Eskred is yours, sweet prince. Take me to your castle. Let me see your proud towers rising from the sea.
I left my horse at the inn. Come. They walked down the strand together, and when Theon took her arm, she did not pull away. He liked the way she walked. There was a boldness to it, part saunter and part sway, that suggested she would be just as bold beneath the blankets. Lordsport was as crowded as he'd ever seen it, swarming with the crews of the longships that lined the pebble shore and rode at anchor well out past the breakwater. Iron men do not bend their knees often nor easily, but Theon noted that oarsmen and townfolk alike grew quiet as they passed and acknowledged him with respectful bows of the head.
They have finally learned who I am, he thought, and past time too.
Lord Goodbrother of Great Wick had come in the night before with his main strength, near 40 longships. His men were everywhere, conspicuous in their striped goat's hair sashes. It was said about the inn that Otter Gimpney's whores were being fucked bow-legged by beardless boys in sashes. The boys were welcome to them, as far as Theon was concerned, a poxier den of slatterns he hoped he'd never see. His present companion was more to his taste. That she was wed to his father's shipwright and pregnant to boot only made her more intriguing.
Has my lord prince begun choosing his crew?
Eskred asked as they made their way toward the stable.
Ho, Blue Tooth!
She shouted to a passing seafarer, a tall man in a bearskin vest and raven-winged helm.
How fares your bride?
Fat with child, and talking of twins.
So soon?
Eskred smiled that wicked smile.
You got your oar in the water quickly.
Aye, and stroked and stroked and stroked,
roared the man. A big man, Theon observed.
Blue Tooth, was it?
Should I choose him for my sea bitch?
Only if you mean to insult him. Blue Tooth has a sweet ship of his own.
I've been too long away to know one man from the other.
Theon admitted. He looked for a few of his friends he'd played with as a boy, but they were gone, dead or grown into strangers. My uncle, Victorian, has loaned me his own steersman.
Raymorf Stormdrunk. A good man, so long as he's sober.
She saw more faces she knew and called out to a passing trio,
Uller, Carl, where's your brother, Skate?
The drowned god needed a strong oarsman, I fear, replied the stocky man with a white streak in his beard.
What he means is, Eldest drank too much wine and his fat belly burst, said the pink-cheeked youth beside him.
What's dead may never die, Eskred said.
What's dead may never die,
Theon muttered the words with them.
You seem well known,
he said to the woman when the men had passed on.
Every man loves the shipwright's wife. He had better, lest he wants his ship to sink. If you need men to pull your oars, you could do worse than those three.
Lord Sport has no lack of strong arms.
Theon had given the matter no little thought. It was fighters he wanted, and men who would be loyal to him, not to his lord father or his uncles. He was playing the part of a dutiful young prince for the moment, while he waited for Lord Balin to reveal the fullness of his plans. If it turned out that he did not like those plans, or his part in them, however, well...
Strength is not enough. A longship's oars must move as one if you would have her best speed. Choose men who have rowed together before, if you're wise.
Sage counsel, perhaps you'll help me choose them. Better believe I want her wisdom. Women fancy that.
I may, if you treat me kindly.
Well, how else?
Theon quickened his stride as they neared the Mirahem, rocking high and empty by the quay. Her captain had tried to sail a fortnight past, but Lord Balin would not permit it. None of the merchantmen that called at Lordsport had been allowed to depart again. His father wanted no word of the hosting to reach the mainland before he was ready to strike.
My lord,
a plaintive voice called down from the forecastle of the merchanter. The captain's daughter leaned over the rail, gazing after him. Her father had forbidden her to come ashore, but whenever Theon came to Lordsport, he spied her wandering forlornly about the deck.
My lord, a moment, she called after him. As it please, my lord.
Did she?
Eskred asked, as Theon hurried her past the cog.
Please, my lord?
He saw no sense in being coy with this one.
For a time, now she wants to be my sort wife.
Oh, well, she'd profit from some sorting, no doubt. Too soft and bland, that one. Or am I wrong?
You're not wrong. Soft and bland, precisely. How had she known?
He had told Wex to wait at the inn. The common room was so crowded that Theon had to push his way through the door. Not a seat was to be had at bench nor table. Nor did he see his squire.
Wex!
He shouted over the din and clatter.
If he's up with one of those poxy whores, I'll strip the hide off him,
he was thinking, when he finally spied the boy dicing near the hearth. And winning, too, by the look of the pile of coins before him.
Time to go, Theon announced. When the boy paid him no mind, he seized him by the ear and pulled him from the game.
Wex grabbed up a fistful of coppers and came along without a word. That was one of the things Theon liked best about him. Most squires have loose tongues, but Wex had been born dumb, which didn't seem to keep him from being clever as any 12-year-old had a right to be. He was a base-born son of one of Lord Butley's half-brothers. Taking him as squire had been part of the price Theon had paid for his horse. When Wex saw Eskred, his eyes went round.
You'd think you'd never seen a woman before, Theon thought.
Eskred will be riding with me back to Pike. Saddle the horses and be quick about it.
The boy had ridden in on a scrawny little garron from Lord Balon's stable, but Theon's mount was quite another sort of beast.
Where did you find that hell horse?
Eskred asked when she saw him. But from the way she laughed, he knew she was impressed.
Lord Butley bought him in Lannisport a year past, but he proved to be too much horse for him, so Butley was pleased to sell.
The Iron Islands were too sparse and too rocky for breeding good horses.
Most of the islanders were indifferent riders at best, more comfortable on the deck of a longship than in the saddle. Even the lords rode garrons or shaggy hardlaw ponies, and ox carts were more common than drays. The small folk, too poor to own either one, pulled their own ploughs through the thin, stony soil. But Theon had spent 10 years in Winterfell and did not intend to go to war without a good mount beneath him. Lord Botley's misjudgment was his good fortune. A stallion with a temper as black as his hide, larger than a courser, if not quite so big as most destriers. As Theon was not quite so big as most knights, that suited him admirably. The animal had fire in his eyes. When he met his new owner, he pulled back his lips and tried to bite off his face.
"Does he have a name?"
Esgred asked Theon as he mounted. "Smiler." He gave her a hand and pulled her up in front of him, where he could put his arms around her as they rode. "I knew a man once who told me that I smiled at the wrong things."
"Do you?"
"Only by the lights of those who smile at nothing." He thought of his father and his uncle Aaron.
"Are you smiling now, my lord prince?"
"Oh, yes." Theon reached around her to take the reins. She was almost of a height with him. Her hair could have used a wash, and she had a faded pink scar on her pretty neck. But he liked the smell of her, salt and sweat and woman. The ride back to Pyke promised to be a good deal more interesting than the ride down had been. When they were well beyond Lordsport, Theon put a hand on her breast. Esgred reached up and plucked it away.
"I'd keep both hands on the reins, or this black beast of yours is like to fling us both off and kick us to death."
"I broke him of that." Amused, Theon behaved himself for a while, chatting amiably of the weather, grey and overcast, as it had been since he arrived with frequent rains, and telling her of the man he'd killed in the Whispering Wood. When he reached the part about coming that close to the Kingslayer himself, he slid his hand back up to where it had been. Her breasts were small, but he liked the firmness of them.
"You don't want to do that, my lord prince."
"Oh, but I do." Theon gave her a squeeze.
"Your squire is watching you. Let him. You'll never speak of it, I swear."
Esgred pried his fingers off her breast. This time she kept him firmly prisoned. She had strong hands. "I like a woman with a good tight grip." She snorted.
"I'd not have thought it by that wench on the waterfront.
You must not judge me by her. She was the only woman on the ship."
"Tell me of your father. Will he welcome me kindly to his castle?"
"Why should he? He scarcely welcomed me, his own blood, the heir to Pyke and the Iron Islands."
"Are you?"
she asked mildly.
"It said that you have uncle's brothers, a sister."
"My brothers are long dead, and my sister, well, they say Asher's favourite gown is a chainmail hauberk that hangs down past her knees with boiled leather small clothes beneath. Men's garb won't make her a man, though. I'll make a good marriage alliance with her once we've won the war. If I can find a man to take her. As I recall, she had a nose like a vulture's beak, a ripe crop of pimples, and no more chest than a boy."
"You can marry off your sister," Esgred observed, "but not your uncles."
"My uncles?" Theon's claim took precedence over those of his father's three brothers, but the woman had touched on a sore point nonetheless. In the islands, it was scarce unheard of for a strong, ambitious uncle to dispossess a weak nephew of his rights, and usually murder him in the bargain. "But I am not weak," Theon told himself, "and I mean to be stronger yet by the time my father dies." "My uncles pose no threat to me," he declared. "Aeron is drunk on seawater and sanctity. He lives only for his god."
"His god, not yours."
"Mine as well. What is dead can never die." He smiled thinly. "If I make pious noises as required, damp hair will give me no trouble, and my uncle Victarion..."
"Lord Captain of the Iron Fleet and a fearsome warrior. I have heard them sing of him in the alehouses."
"During my lord father's rebellion,
He sailed into Lannisport with my uncle Euron and burned the Lannister fleet where it lay at anchor, Theon recalled. The plan was Euron's, though. Victarion is like some great grey bullet, strong and tireless and dutiful, but not like to win any races. No doubt he'll serve me as loyally as he served my lord father. He has neither the wits nor the ambition to plot betrayal.
Huron Croy has no lack of cunning, though. I've heard men say terrible things of that one.
Theon shifted his seat. My uncle Euron has not been seen in the islands for close on 2 years. He may be dead. If so, it might be for the best. Lord Balon's eldest brother had never given up the old way, even for a day. His silence, with its black sails and dark red hull, was infamous in every port from Ibn to Ashai, it was said.
He may be dead, Eskred agreed. And if he lives, why, he has spent so long at sea, he'd be half a stranger here. The Ironborn would never seat a stranger in the sea stone chair.
I suppose not, Theon replied, before it occurred to him that some would call him a stranger as well. The thought made him frown.
10 years is a long time. But I'm back now, and my father is far from dead. I've time to prove myself.
He considered fondling Eskred's breast again, but she would probably only take his hand away, and all this talk of his uncle's had dampened his ardour somewhat. Time enough for such play at the castle, in the privacy of his chambers. I will speak to Helya when we reach Pike, and see that you have an honoured place at the feast, he said. I must sit on the dais at my father's right hand, but I will come down and join you when he leaves the hall. He seldom lingers long. He has no belly for drink these days.
A grievous thing when a great man grows old. Lord Balon is but the father of a great man. Oh, a modest lordling.
Only a fool humbles himself when the world is so full of men eager to do that job for him. He kissed her lightly on the nape of her neck.
What shall I wear to this great feast?
She reached back and pushed his face away. I'll ask Helya to garb you. One of my lady mother's gowns might do. She is off on Harlaw and not expected to return.
The cold winds have worn her away, I hear. Will you not go see her? Harlaw is only a day's sail, and surely Lady Greyjoy yearns for a last sight of her son.
Would that I could. I'm kept too busy here. My father relies on me now that I'm returned. Come peace, perhaps.
Your coming might bring her peace.
Now you sound like a woman, Theon complained.
I confess I am, and you with child.
Somehow that thought excited him. So you say, but your body shows no sign of it. How shall it be proven? Before I believe you, I shall need to see your breast grow ripe and taste your mother's milk.
And what will my husband say to this, your father's own sworn man and servant?
We'll give him so many ships to build, he'll never know you've left him. She laughed.
It's a cruel lordling who seized me. If I promised you that one day you may watch my babe get sucked, will you tell me more of your war, Theon of House Greyjoy? There are miles and mountains still ahead of us, and I would hear of this wolf king you served, and the golden lions he fights.
Ever anxious to please her, Theon obliged. The rest of the long ride passed swiftly as he filled her pretty head with tales of Winterfell and war. Some of the things he said astonished him.
She is easy to talk to. God's praise her, he reflected. I feel as though I've known her for years. If the wench's pillow play is half the equal of her wit, I'll need to keep her.
He thought of Sigrin, the shipwright, a thick-bodied, thick-witted man, flaxen hair already receding from a pimpled brow, and shook his head.
A waste. A most tragic waste.
It seemed scarcely any time at all before the great curtain wall of Pike loomed up before them. The gates were open. Theon put his heels into Smiler and rode through at a brisk trot. The hounds were barking wildly as he helped Eskred dismount. Several came bounding up, tails wagging. They shot straight past him and almost bowled the woman over, leaping all around her, yapping and licking. "Off!" Theon shouted, aiming an ineffective